Mr. Fiddler, Reel 7. We were talking about the time you spent at Cully before you went into action at Epsom. You mentioned the visits to the village. I should have picked up at the time. How did you went to the shop, you said, oh, how did you get on with the French?
We got on relatively well with the French. They had a bit of a hammering in front of us, but that had more or less bypassed them. And we would go down there with a tin of bully or a tin of soup to barter with the cider that we knew we would get from the shops down there. A couple of tables outside, a couple of chairs, we could sit down there. And you would have not a chat with the locals, you'd do it all hand signed. This was the only way we could communicate with them. But as soon as they saw that we had tins, then we were talking. We were, you know, they were happy and we were happy. We were getting the soda, they were getting some of the stuff that we had.
What did you think of cider? I mean, French cider, it's not a normal drink in England then. What did you take to it?
Let me say, it's better than, what's the other French one? Calvados. Oh dear. That was enough to blow your head off. Well, it was, I suppose one would say it was something a little bit different.
Did you or many others get drunk, or was it just a drink?
Not on the cider, only on the Calvados, but that comes a bit later.
Okay. the next thing then is, when you went into action properly for the first time, can we look at that? Was there much actual bombing or shelling or mortar fire around while you were at Cully?
We had very little. We had very little. We had a few air attacks. In fact, really, it wasn't an air attack. It was fighters going across us, going to the beaches. So there wasn't a lot in the village itself. That didn't come till we moved out. I think we went about 2 to 3 miles to our first encounter. This was late at night. I think we were following the...
Is this the actual Operation Epsom, the attack on Sher?
Yeah. One of the attacks on Sher. They were keep getting pushed back. It was changing hands, and the same as Hill 112, changing hands at a ridiculous rate. 1 minute we were on there, and sometimes they were on there. But yes, this is the first attack on, as far as we were concerned, because we went through, I believe it was a Scottish division, went through the 12th, I don't know, but we went through this division. We didn't meet the Germans itself until late on in the afternoon. We hadn't got very far when two or three tanks of A squadron went up.
Could you see that? Now, one thing I want to get straight: were you at this time in a 75mm tank or a Firefly?
No, 75.
Still in the 75mm. And you were still co-driver?
Yeah.
So, you wouldn't... Would you see these tanks go
up? Oh, my goodness me, yes, you could. We had a tank go over on our road, and we didn't know who the crews were half the time, and we didn't know who the troop was. Not until we got back late at night. There was a tank on our left, I can remember this, 100 yards to our left. It was right on top of this German gun. And the tank was probably about 50 yards from this anti-tank gun. We do know it's an anti-tank gun. And it just erupted. It was engulfed in literally in flames, and I can remember seeing two coming out through the turret. They were the clothes was just a light, a flame, and they both of these jumped down off the tank and literally laid on the grass, burning. We didn't go over to them. We were still moving forward. I can remember we left these. It's beginning to get a wee bit on the dark side now, and We had two.
What happened to the? You say that was the tank on the left. What about the tank you saw to your right? What, had that gone up as well?
No, this one was still. But we still don't know what troop it was. You know, because we're there, there's a wee bit of a mix-up. There's already been a troop, I think two troop in front of us, and that was that had already lost three tanks. And then there was the one on the right, then that one brewed up. And you can see this because with your periscope you're drawn to what's happening over onto the left, and then somebody up in the turret is saying there's a tank flaming on the right. We had two armoured piercing shots over the top of us, and I can remember still Brownlee telling Jock McKinnon to reverse, bloody quick. And
how could you tell the shots went past?
Well, you can literally hear these, and you can see these. You can see, and the amazing thing is, if they hit the ground without going round, they just spin round. With an AT, of course, it will explode on it. But if an AP doesn't hit the tank or doesn't hit anything and it just drops, this is at the end of its trajectory, it will just spin round in the ground. But we were only a matter of 50-100 yards from this. We're in a wooded area now. We were about 100 yards, 50 to 100 yards away from this one, and it's dark when this tank, we don't know whether it was a tank or an anti-tank gun, fired these two shots over the top of us.
And you could actually see them in flight, surely?
Well, you can, all you know is that they're actually reddish colour when they hit the tank. So he told us there's two APs going being fired at from a gun front.
Would you see them, or would that be him who saw?
No, we wouldn't. No. We wouldn't.
So you hadn't. Brownlee told.
He told us. This is the time where we don't really know what's going on. Only what's going on around us, really.
So you put. Still, Brownlee told you to get back a bit. Now you wouldn't.
He reversed the driver. You know, because we were under fire from whatever it was in front of us. But we didn't get hit.
Now, what had you been doing so far? I mean, you were co-driver.
The Steel Brownlee would, or the commander would tell you to brass up the whatever was in front. Because that's all you can do, really. You haven't got a lot of movement of the gun. I suppose you've got about 190 degrees, and all you can do is just let rip with a. This is literally all the machine gunner can do, really, down in the hole. There's nothing. He's just sitting there, really, with nothing that he can do.
So, what would you fire at?
Just anything, because it was dark. There was nothing. Literally, you couldn't turn around and say there's a man over there, there's a gun over there. You just let rip with everything that you had.
Had you opened fire, when it was lighter, when you were moving forward, when you saw the
tank? No, because, well, we didn't see anything to fire at, but now we're in the wood.
So you just fired generally?
Generally, yeah.
With tracer in it? It's got tracer,
oh,
in, hasn't it?
Tracer. Tracer, ball, and one other in Sendry, yeah. I think it was three types of.
And did you fire a lot?
You would, I think, probably that night, probably about two canfuls to.
So you wouldn't have to replace the barrel?
No. I can't remember when the barrel did have to, what the rate, you know, I can't remember when the barrel did change.
Was it firing the main gun during this period?
AG. It would, it'd be firing a couple of AG shots, I think. And
you wouldn't know what they fired at.
Well, you no, not really. You wouldn't know what they were firing at. There were things going on around you. You know, there was a hell of a lot of noise. There were tanks going up.
Could you hear other tanks over the noise of your own tank? I mean, how much noise? What was it sort of like in action in your tanks?
Well, bear in mind, you had earphones on anyway, you know, for whatever, you know, instructions, interior stuff.
So that was the...
You could still hear and see what was going on through your periscopes.
And how much racket would the actual tank be making? Your tank?
Well...
I mean, was it noisy in there?
Oh, a tank is noisy all. It's noisy all the time, and I don't think it's anything you get used to. You accept it anyway. Oh, they're very, very noisy. They're very confined.
What about the engines smell? I mean, fumes. Were the fumes?
No, the fumes were from the guns. Really, the you didn't. Smell the engine at all, but the guns were, especially in the turret, more so than anywhere, especially when the big gun fired.
So you'd have the noise of the engine, the tracks, you've got your headphones on, which was a link to Brownlee. You could all speak, though, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah, you could speak to, you had a hand-operated, I think the Americans had throat, but we had the hand-operated mic.
And would you speak much, or would it be mainly still Brownlee?
You would only speak, you know, really, if you wanted, if you were in a problem, you know, if your gun had jammed or anything like that, because you tried to keep the airways open, because he had messages coming in from other troops or the squadron leader. He would tell him to pull out if he was in any trouble. Or, you know, if you were being pulled back, or if you were going back into Liga Harbour or whatever.
Now, what about, did anything hit, I mean, would you be under machine gun fire or anything? I mean, would anything be hitting your tank as you were going along, or was it just...
Oh.
Or did you just...
Well, you wouldn't take any notice of machine gun. If you were under machine gun fire, you know, it wouldn't make a lot of difference.
There was no splash in those days coming from inside?
No, the only splash you got if you were hit by an AP.
A proper shell. So you pulled back slightly when these two anti-tank shells went past you.
Yeah.
What happened then?
I think we were then pulling back into, I think we were told then to, because we're late at night, I think it was somewhere at about 12 o'clock, and we were told to come back into Liga, but it took us a long time to find the squadron Liga.
Did you know what had happened, or where you were, or was in...
I think it's fair to say that really, we didn't know really what was going on. We weren't being attacked. They were, you know, we were trying to push forward, but of course we'd come across Germans holding a defensive line here, and we just couldn't break through. And it was then time to move back into harbour.
And that was the night of 26th.
That was 27th. The first. That was the first night, which was frightening. Nobody really knew. Nobody really knew. We'd been in their tanks most of the day, although I think we'd only come in across the Germans for about, I suppose, 2 to 3 hours. So really, but we were still bushed by the time we got back.
Now then. You'd find out, how did you feel when you got back to the lager? I mean, this is when you'd find out the casualty, you'd had those two tanks knocked out. You hadn't had any more, I think.
Well, I think we'd had five knocked out of the squadron. I think I'm right in saying that there was five knocked out of the squadron, but we didn't, I'm not sure whether we lost any in the troop. I don't think we did, not that particular day. I just can't remember.
The two you saw weren't in your troop. They were just...
No. When we realised afterwards, although I think there was a Sergeant Greenfield knocked out, I can't really recall. But when we got back into Liga, you know, the news then starts coming back that you know Charlie this, or you know got him. He was knocked out. He'd been brewed up. He's not coming back. But then, of course, we've then got to the echelons are coming in. Air Force job is to get the tank ready for the following day. So there's ammunition. Ammunition's got to be put in. The gun's got to be cleaned. And ammunition and fuel. That comes before anything that becomes before. It doesn't matter whatever time of the night you come in, you've got to do that before you eat, and then if you've got time to get your head down.
So no matter how time.
I think we come in somewhere around about 2 o'clock, and I think we were out again at first light somewhere in the region of 6 o'clock. We had to be out of harbour.
And you'd pick up your ammunition and fuel and
everything. The echelon would come down, the truck would come down, and the grub. Nobody felt like really eating on that particular.
What was your morale like? I mean,
I'm not going to say it was a low, but it wasn't. It was a lot lower than it was when we started.
What did you? You're now beginning to get an idea that Sherman's caught fire. You'd seen the burnt out.
Oh
one.
Yes.
You'd also
yes.
seen two yeah, of your own.
We'd gun. Already seen this. You know, when we first got there, and my reaction was. Oh my God, I don't think I can put up with it. Although, there again, I hadn't seen anything yet. But I still thought I was in the wrong job. Because it's very frightening if you see a tank that's going up. I was always under the impression that a tank, you were safe in a tank. A tank couldn't burn, but a tank would burn and they would smoulder for days. And they would be smouldering. When we went back up, these tanks were still smouldering.
And
so we had to go back more or less to the same place as we were before.
Were you aware that the Sherman had a particular reputation for catching fire?
No, I think the name Ronson, as far as we were concerned, only started to come in. There weren't very many places on the tank whereby it wouldn't blow up.
It wouldn't
blow up. No, there were not many places that you could hit a Sherman, and it would. The majority of hits would be a blow up.
And when did you start to realise?
Because all the ammunition was round the outside of the tank, on the inside of the tank, but round in the hull part of the tank.
So wherever the shell hit, it was likely to cause the whole tank to go up. And when did you start to really realise that? Or had you, after the first day in action, begun to grasp it?
I think we grasped it the first night, when we heard what had gone on, and to see the tanks that had been brewed up. And I don't think there was that particular night. Right through the regiment, or the squadron at least, I don't think that there was one that hadn't brewed up.
So all the hits, they hadn't just sort of stopped with a track off or the rest of it, they'd all caught fire?
The majority, yeah.
As far as you knew?
Yeah, yeah.
And that affected your...
In other words, none of the tanks, I think at that time, were recoverable.
And that affected your nerve, or began to?
Yes, it did. And really, and also to say that we really, I personally, or Air Tank really, except for two APs going over the top of the turret, we weren't really, well, we were in the thick of it, but we weren't in too much involved.
So, next day, that would be the 27th, you moved, as you said before, you moved back up towards Shirt. Same route, if you saw the same
thing. More or less the same route, because we could see the tank. But we were trying to probe in another slightly different area. And because we had the progress that we'd made was pretty limited.
And what do you remember of that day's fighting then?
Well, this was pretty early. This was pretty early in the morning. The I think the same old stuff, really. Tanks getting knocked out, a lot of things going on. There was always a lot of infantry around, and there was a lot of HE coming over, a lot of machine gunning, which of course didn't affect us a lot. We were moving around. We didn't really know. Sometimes we thought we were going around in circles, but obviously we must have been pushing forward. It was very difficult to. It's very difficult to imagine what was happening around you. You could only see in one direction. It was very difficult to. You knew it was going on, and you could hear what was going on over the oncoming. You know that the troop sergeant had been knocked out, or he was under attack, and still Brown, you would then tell him what to do, where to go. Pull back, or what, you know, you had to use a lot of initiative, but he would be the bloke that would move you around.
Any specific instance you remember? I mean, did you open fire or at anything in particular, or did you close escapes?
No, we didn't have any. I can't remember having any close escape there at all. No, can't remember.
So nothing particular happened to your tank that day?
Oh, no.
So at the end of that day's fighting, back into Lager, I presume?
Yes, I can't remember where we lagered. It's very, very...
It doesn't matter that much.
I can't really... I can't really remember.
And then the 28th... You went forward again. You know, because this whole battle went on for 4 days.
This is the trouble. We're going forward. Yeah.
Oh, I can understand.
We're
yeah.
going forward a lot of days. But we, in fact, it was, I'm not sure what it was about here, that we had moved in a different area altogether. But dates meant nothing to nothing to us, really. Because it was just... push forward here, push forward there. If we can't get through there, well, we move the whole division. What they did, we seemed to be working. There was the 29th Armoured Division and the 179th Infantry Brigade, I believe. There was two tank regiments that used to work together, which was the 3rd Tanks and the 23rd Hussars, and then there was the 5th and 4th, and I believe the North Lancashire Yeomanry, and we used to work a lot together. But this wasn't always the case. Sometimes there'd be a squadron, air squadron would work on their own, the regiment would work on their own, with different infantry regiments. And we were we had to be prepared to move into from one side of the battle area to completely another one, maybe 5 miles away.
Now, on the 28th, they made a dart across the Odon, River Odon, and towards what this point 112.
Hill 112.
Now, you might remember some of the fighting. Were you involved in the fighting round Hill 112?
We were involved with it, but we were involved with it as a squadron. We weren't. You wouldn't move as a regiment. You would move mainly as a squadron. And when that squadron was in trouble, another one would probably go through you. Or you may go through another regiment. You may go through the North Ants Yeomanry. They'd been backed up a bit. We would then take over. Or A squadron maybe had a few knocked out. B squadron would then come and take over. And you would then move back. It would very, very... it used to fluctuate on a daily basis. 1 minute you were on 112, then the Germans were on 112, and I think this went on for weeks and weeks, whereby we were in possession of the hill, then we'd be driven off.
I know you can't talk about individual days in a situation like
that. I just can't.
Were there any particular things that happened in that area, in around the hill 112, that you remember?
No, I just can't. Literally, we were on the move most days. Occasionally, you would be taken out for a 3 days rest, but mainly you were always on the move. You may not be up the front, you may be at the back, but it's something that you just can't really tie down unless you were specifically involved in, maybe when you were knocked out or something.
And that didn't happen to you then?
No, it's later on. It's very, very difficult. Very, very difficult. Really, I suppose I've got to say that I can't really pick up until we made the big attack on Caen.
Goodwood?
Yeah.
Could I just ask about the sort of ground in the 112? Oh, no, because that was supposed to be proper Bocage area.
Yeah, Bocage.
What was that like, you know?
Well, it was a lot of sunken lanes and such like. It was very poor tank country. It wasn't open at all. But I was there all the time, but there's nothing I can really specifically say about it. You know, it's just...
And still...
It's impossible, really. Well, for me personally, to quote really on this...
And you were still a co-driver and still in a 75mm tank.
Yes.
Gun tank.
Yeah.
So, had you lost any friends during the period? I mean...
Yes. Yes, I'd lost three drivers, I think. Taffy Arkins had been...
In other tanks?
Yes, yes. I think I'm right in saying that Steel Brownlee never got brewed up. I'm pretty sure. But he certainly didn't whilst I was with him.
So you were saying about... Sorry, I interrupted you.
We were hit with a bazooka, but that was it.
That was later.
That was a little bit later, not a lot. But it's not really worth talking about.
How did you feel about these casualties then? Sorry, I interrupted you there.
Well, I don't think you had a lot of time for feeling, really. Not until that you went out on a rest period, then you began to think that... Hello, where are all these new blokes coming from? And these, of course, were replacement from crews that had already bailed out. I don't think you could spend a lot of time thinking too much about what happened to them. You knew them at the squadron, but you didn't see quite so much of them, only when you come into Lager or Liga or Harbour.
Well, I should have asked, when you did it, what was the setup of a lager? I mean, how was it organised? We talked about what you did in lager, but how was the squadron arranged?
They were normally in a square.
Would it be a squadron or a regimental lager?
Well, normally it was a squadron. And there would be four troops, each troop having four troops formed a square. And the troops and the tanks would be positioned not from head to tail, but at an angle so that if you were under attack, you could get out. But if you were nose to tail, you wouldn't be able to get out. So it was like this, so that you could pull out. And bivvies always used to go on the inside of the square, so that you were on the inside. Then, of course, you had to mount guard. I think I'm right in saying that each tank, each body took a turn of guard each night, hour, 2 hours or whatever.